This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On ABC Listen.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is where the conversation begins.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
Video killed the radio star. Remember when MTV was killing everything? I think that's a question that determines if you're a Gen Xer or not. Not that year that you were born. Do you watch music videos? What is your favourite music video? I want you to join the conversation today because tomorrow marks 45 years since that revolution called MTV was invented. Did you grow up with it? Do you remember watching endless hours of MTV? And if so, do you still watch music videos? I do. Just every so often. I just love to settle back, watch them. Is this a lost art, though? My education about music, especially Australian music, was informed around and through the rise of music videos. We're going to talk about just how powerful they were, not just for our knowledge of music, but for the artists involved, for the business of music. I'm wondering if your kids and your friends and family's kids watch music videos. Mine personally don't. Raph Epstein was just telling me about, though, some of the kids these days, they're watching them on YouTube, sometimes to even learn the dances that go with it, particularly the Korean music. How has our relationship to music videos changed? What is your favourite music video? I'd love to hear from you. I remember when the Like a Virgin video was the only thing people were talking about, because back in the day when we had monoculture, when that meant something very different to potentially how we're using it now, when everyone had to sit down and watch the same thing, MTV really was king. And I'd love to know what your memories of that time, of MTV's rise, really were. Tell me, do you used to watch music videos? And I want to hear all about your favourites. Also today, what should the new Premier do for your business? Does he need to walk back the working from home legislation that Jacinta Allen has introduced? Ben Carroll has explicitly said his leadership will be business friendly. So I'd love to hear from you if you are a business owner, particularly a small business owner. Is what you need from your new Premier, is it to walk back the working from home legislation? Maybe it's something else. Maybe if you're employed by a small business, tell me what you think should be the things that the new Premier is thinking about. Also today, Craig Foster is going to join us to talk about the civil war breaking out in world football. Can you believe it? If you don't know anything about it, stick with us because Craig Foster will tell us all about it. We are talking, though, first about music videos, MTV's 45th birthday. Cecile in Montmorency, tell me your best music video.
It has to be Take On Me by A-ha.
Oh, right. I remember it. It was revolutionary for its time, wasn't it, in terms of the production?
It was a combination of animation and live action. And I believe it was the second version of the video, but it was amazing. And I think, anyone of my age, 50-something, will remember.
That little blast of Take On Me for you, Cecile, that's from Richard. He's giving that to you as a present today. Tell me what your favourite music video is. Karen from Murrumbina, what's yours?
Well, I have two. One would be AC/DC's Long Way to the Top, going up Swanston Street.
Oh, of course.
And the second, which speaks to my age, is Live's Lightning Crashes.
Oh, I don't know that one. Certainly. Right. And what made them, I mean, I know about the AC/DC one. I think everyone in Melbourne has a special, everyone in Victoria holds that, it has a special place in their heart. But what was the second one for you? What made it good?
Oh, it just tells the story. Music videos don't often tell a story anymore, but this really does, which actually isn't what the song was originally about, but then it was reinterpreted and then performed by the band. And it's, you know, the whole circle of life, life, death, beautiful.
What was the name of the song again, Karen?
Lightning Crashes.
Lightning Crashes. We'll have to look that up. Thank you. I would love to hear your nominations as well. Joining me now is Tim Kelly, who's former label executive for Sony and currently the program director at the Australian Institute of Music. Thanks for joining me, Tim.
My pleasure, Mary. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Just before we get to you, though, Robert from Dali had a nomination as well. Robert, tell us, what should we be looking at? Hello?
Sledgehammer video. Hello? Peter Gabriel's Sledgehammer video?
Oh, of course. And that had the animation as well.
Animation, the train around his face, all that kind of thing.
Yeah. Did you grow up watching MTV, Robert?
Yeah, I'm of that generation. I saw it start and saw it finish.
Robert, thank you. Please join the conversation. It's a Gen X party here today, 1300 222 774. But also, if you're younger than that Gen X, what is your relationship with music videos? Are they still something that you go towards? 1300 222 774 is the number to call. Tim Kelly, as I said, you were a former label executive for Sony, so you can really give an insight into just how important and revolutionary MTV was. Tell us what effect it had on the industry.
It had a huge effect, I think, in a few different ways. One, it turned music from mainly an audio form to a visual form, and that meant that people had to look gooder, look better, look gooder, that's really bad English.
That's all right.
Look better for presentation in a video format. It also enabled songs to maybe cross borders, because you had this, you know, global promotional system that MTV was. And I think you saw that with artists like Culture Club breaking America through MTV. It would probably have been inconceivable that a band like Culture Club could have broken Middle America, given their sexuality and the campness in that video. But Karma Chameleon became a hit through the video format. Additionally, the importance was represented by the level of investment. When I was at Sony in the early 2000s, the US superstars, often one video would cost $500,000 back in the early 2000s. This was a really expensive business, which showed how important it was. That probably favored the big companies over the smaller companies, because of course the big companies had the resources to be able to invest $500,000 on one video, and the smaller companies did not.
Mm. What's your favourite music video? 1300 222 774 is the number to call. Kirsty in Portland, what's your nomination?
Well, I've got a couple. I really love Blind Melon's No Rain, with the adorable little girl dancing around in her bee suit.
Okay.
Oh, look, it's so cute and so sweet, and I still just smile every time I see it. I also love Basement Jack's Where's Your Head At? But I have one that really freaks me out still, and it's Aphex Twin, a song called Come to Daddy.
Ooh. That could go very bad ways.
Oh, it was very freaky, and it still scares me like 30 years later. So I think that's a thing that's made an impression.
Kirsty,
so watch Aphex Twin and then watch Blind Melon.
Okay, I will. I'm writing these down, you know. I am actually going to do it, because it is my guilty pleasure to go home and watch music videos. Darcy in Seddon, what's your pick?
Yeah, how's it going?
Hi.
My pick is Weapon of Choice, with Christopher Watkins.
Oh, can you just repeat that? I think it just broke up. Darcy?
That's all good. Weapon of Choice, by Fatboy Slim, Christopher Watkins. He's basically just dancing through the whole film clip.
What a fun. That's right. The Christopher Walken clip.
Yeah, very
iconic. Richard's found that one as well. Yes, I think that music, actually, with the video in mind, really does transcend what it was in the first place. Darcy, that's a terrific nomination. Kevin in Geelong, what music video sticks in your mind?
I was just going to say to you, I think Rage was a little bit more important back in the 80s than was MTV, because
Good
Rage,
call.
Of course, ran all night, let me just say that when it first started, of course, it wasn't available in Melbourne because the people in Melbourne boycotted it. The unions wouldn't let it go to air, which was unfortunate. But the best video ever would have to be All Night Long, Lionel Richie.
Oh, right. Is that the one where he dances on a ceiling? No, that's Dancing on the Ceiling.
No, that's Dancing on the Ceiling. I went to see Lionel in 87 and he was astonishing. It's just brilliant.
Oh, yes. I know we're talking about music videos, but isn't it fun just to dip in and out of the songs as well? That's from Richard to you. Thank you so much for that nomination. Still on the line is Tim Kelly, who's program director at the Australian Institute of Music and a former label executive for Sony. We are talking about the 45th anniversary of the start of MTV. And Tim, you were talking before about how the mixture of audio and video propelled it so much for the artists themselves. What did it mean for the label? How much of their focus was going towards, you were talking about the money, but what did the labels need to do in order to fit the MTV formula?
It was a huge focus for the labels, and that's why the budgets went up because that focus was so strong. And I think that back then there were two ways to really break a record. The first was through radio, and the second was through MTV. And also in Australia, we had Channel V, of course, as well, which was probably actually more important from a local market perspective than MTV. But the you know, there were quite different times. I mean, I think if you think back of these videos, there was a mystery to the artists, and they were superstars, and they were presented as such in these videos. They looked great. There were storylines. They were iconic, as your listeners are saying. They're iconic video moments that we all recollect. And I'm just going to chuck one more in: the Sinead O'Connor's tear in "Nothing Compares to You."
Oh,
I think is an
course.
Iconic video moment.
And the production on that, just on the face. In the context of all those crazy overproduced ones, it really landed.
But that was still expensive production, and it was still very choreographed. I'm not saying the tear wasn't real, but that was a full video crew making that video with a script and an idea in mind that they're executing. And nowadays, video is still really important, but it's very much more. Very fragmented, and most people consume videos on YouTube or TikTok or Insta, mm-hmm. and sometimes there can be snippets of things, there can be shorts, as they call them. And nowadays we've moved from this kind of this mystery and this glamour and this kind of stardom that videos used to represent to notions of authenticity and sharing and vulnerability. So the budgets are a lot smaller, which reflects the decline in the market. It also reflects the way we're appreciating or the way we're consuming our music in the modern context as compared to MTV representing the context of our generation, if you like.
Indeed. And everyone, I can see you nominating Rage as well. Obviously, such an iconic part of our music history. We are talking about MTV, though, because it is the anniversary. I'm asking your favourite videos. Tim Kelly, I want to keep talking to you about how it has evolved to the present day. But Helen from Nanargoon, what's your nomination?
The MTV concert with Kurt Cobain and Pearl Jam, The Unplugged.
Oh, yeah.
Like he was talking about production values with the other one. Now, it's so simple, but his singing was really raw, and the way he interpreted those old standards, just was really moving.
Really stripped it back to the beauty of the song. That is an excellent suggestion, Helen. Thank you. Kevin in Box Hill, what are you nominating?
Oh, good morning, Mary. Rolling Stones, Waiting on a Friend. Came out in 81, so yeah, we got a lot of play on MTV back in the day. A lot of people say it's their favourite video of all time. Keith Richards walking through an elegantly wasted Keith Richards walking through Manhattan. Goes to a brownstone, shake hands with Mick. They exchange stuff and, yeah.
Yeah, that was 81. You said that's the first year of MTV. They really were one of the first to jump on it. It was a real sign of who knew what was happening in the music video, wasn't it? in the music industry?
There's a story about MTV having absolutely no money, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Then they got in bed with Cyndi Lauper and wrestling, and it just in terms of pop culture, Lou Albano, WrestleMania 1, was just great.
Yeah, and I do remember that, yeah, the artists had to get behind it and get fans to be behind it, and it certainly worked. Kevin, thank you. Chris in Pakenham, what's your choice?
It's an amazing song clip that not many people see these days, but it's Jamiroquai's Virtual Insanity, where the whole set moves and he moves to furniture and jumps off and dances, the lead singer does. But the whole set's moving around, detached from the floor.
Yep, so I remember just, it well.
It's just a visual trip, really, just to watch it. And I've got to give an honourable mention to Mamma Mia. It was one of the really early film clips.
Oh, of course. And the iconic, you know, pivoting on their heels.
Yes, Muriel. I can't watch it without saying Muriel.
Muriel, of course. Chris, thank you. Yes, it not just was iconic music videos, but all of the dances and whatever else that they started as well. Tim Kelly is still patiently waiting on the line. Tim, I was going to just finish by saying, yes, as you said, it's just morphed, hasn't it? And as I was referencing, Raf Epstein was saying, his kids actually look at videos that have got the dance steps that you can learn at the same time. It's just not preset viewing, but it has morphed into another way of consumption for the younger generations.
Yes, absolutely. And I think and in some ways there's some real benefits in that because, you know, with the technology now, anyone can get anything anywhere, anytime. And that's really convenient. In other ways, we've lost that, I hate to say monoculture, but that, that moment that we all know, even if you, so your caller just mentioned Virtual Insanity by Jamiroquai, you know, even if you weren't into that music, you knew the video. And it was something that there could be a conversation about. And whilst I'm not going to name the brand, that has now been recreated as for a drinks company, for an advertising campaign. And that only works because of that that intrinsic knowledge that that whole generation has of that video. And that's something now that things are really big in small communities or in niches, but not a lot manages to cross over to, you know, mainstream public acknowledgement and interaction.
Mm. Thank you so much, Tim, for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Tim Kelly, who's Program Director at the Australian Institute of Music and brings us the insights that he has as a former label executive for Sony. I'd love for you to keep this conversation going. 1300 222 774. We will have more calls. Personally, I'm writing up a list of all of your music videos and I'll go home and watch them. And also later in the program, Wilbur Wilde is going to be joining us talking of music, remembering a music legend in this country, his old friend Glenn A. Baker, who has passed away. Also, a little later in the program, we're talking to Craig Foster about the civil war in world soccer, so stick around for that as well. But next, tell me, what should the new premier do for your business?
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is the Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
So you know it's been a very big week. You got a new premier, Ben Carroll, who has said that he is business friendly. What does that mean for you if you are a business owner, small business owner, if you are the employee or you aspire to be a business owner? 1300 222 774, what should you be putting on his list? Tim Piper is the Victorian head of the Australian Industry Group and joins me now. Hi, Tim. What is the top priority for you? A lot of the talk has been around the working from home legislation, which I believe has been put towards the lower house, still to go to the upper house, potentially with changes. What would you be looking for there?
Well, good morning, Mary. And it's amazing just how things change in the space of a few days, isn't it?
Mm.
How we can be talking about quite different things with our government than we were even last week. So it's amazing how things change like that. But There are a number of things that we're wanting the government to do. We have a number of priorities. Some of them are much bigger, such as the state debt and the Royal Commission, those sorts of things. The work from home is one that's really important to us right now because it's going through Parliament right now. So it becomes a priority to us to that extent. And it becomes a priority because it's a message that can be sent by the new Premier, by what literally is a new government, about their intention to support business.
Mm. So the reporting has been that the new Premier has no intention of scrapping it all together, but potentially with some amendments in the upper house. What would be the top things for you in terms of those amendments?
Well, there are a number of things, and we've been talking to the government for a while, and we're speaking to the Premier's office next week. We need things like stopping the ability to stack work from home days. So, for example, at the moment, if you've got an agreement or even a contract with your employer that says you can have 2 days a week working from home, this current legislation might enable you to have 4 days a week working from home, which obviously isn't the intent. It's crazy to even contemplate that, but people might take advantage of it. So we need to make sure that it's quite explicit in the legislation that it means only 2 days a week working from home.
I was just going to tell the number to people who want to call if they are a small business owner, what they would like you to be talking to the Premier about. Put it on your to-do list to take to the Premier. 1300 222 774 is the number. So there's the stacking principle that you'd like addressed. Anything else?
I'll be listening to what the businesses say, though, too, Mary, because it's very important to hear what they're talking about. But it's issues like the introduction of working from home. How much are employers going to be required to pay? Are they going to be required to do some work on people's houses? Are they going to be required to provide additional screens, additional laptops? What is the extent of the amount that employers are going to be paying? And small businesses are already telling us that they can't afford to be operating two systems as it stands. And so what is required around this? Then there's the OH&S. You know, you've got people at home now and employers don't know what's in your home. So is an employer going to be up for an OH&S injury if you fall over your vacuum cleaner? Those sorts of things. So there's so much detail that we're uncertain about, and we need to make sure the government recognises the potential costs on employers as a result of some of these things and pulls back and makes some amendments to ensure that this is a reasonable piece of legislation.
You're listening to Tim Piper, who's the head of the Victoria branch of the Australia Industry Group. I'd love to hear from you if you're in small business here in Victoria. What do you want changed and what would you like the new Premier to attack first? 1300 222 774. Tim Piper, you were saying it's a long week for us and a lot has changed. Behind the scenes, you obviously lobby, you have connections with government. Are you feeling there's a change already or it's just too early to tell?
We're already feeling a change, Mary, very much so. There's a change in attitude. There's a change in the government's desire to reach out to business. It's a different environment. It's a different government we're dealing with. It's a government that might consider itself more to the right of where it was. We've known the Premier for a long time in that he's been a supporter of business over that period. And indeed, the people that have brought him to the leadership too have been supporters of business. So we expect there to be a change in attitude to business. We expect there to be a bit of support for business that we think's been lacking over the past few years, and that'll be really important to the psyche of businesses, big and small, in Victoria.
We are talking about what you want to see from the new Premier if you are in small business, and Tim Piper wants to hear from you as well. Marshall in Seaford, you've called in and you're a small business owner, is that right?
That is correct. Good morning.
Good morning. What would you like to see from the new Premier?
I don't have a problem with working from home for starts. I think if you want good employees, you've got to give them flexibility. We only have 4 employees in my little company, but 2 of them work from home or hybrid. As long as the job gets done, I don't really care. We're all on the same phone, so our customers don't know where they are. We obviously run a warehouse, which means, you know, my warehouse guy can't work from home, but he's pretty comfortable with that. Mm-hmm. As an employer, I also work from home sometimes. The flexibility is pretty good. And I think employers that are worried about their employees working from home maybe need to look at their own culture.
Right.
You know, what are you worried about your staff doing that they would be doing if they were in the office?
It's interesting so about
that's
that.
What you're working from home.
That on the working from home. Anything more widely that you'd like to see from this premier, who's saying he wants to be more business friendly?
I don't think I don't think the government is business unfriendly. I think sometimes small businesses look for reasons why things don't work. What I would like to maybe suggest to the premier is that we did have an election 4 years ago where we voted for a government, and we haven't yet voted for a new government. So I would maybe like to see a premier that didn't want to change everything, that they don't take to the people to see whether we want to change in policy.
So for you, Marshall, it's about consistency of some of those principles as well. You don't want to see too much of a fresh face.
I like predictability. So I like to know, I like our regular elections every 4 years. I like to know what to expect for the next 4 years rather than having to react on the fly. That would be.
Yeah. Marshall, thank you so much for your thoughts. Really important principle there, Tim Piper, that consistency as well. That's what investment needs. That's what business needs.
Marshall's views are very similar to what I'm hearing from others. Business is not against people working from home at all. What business is against is having to, is not being able to bring people in when they need to. Sometimes you have seasonal times when you need people in 5 days a week, and you might enable them at the other times to be working from home a couple of days a week. You might have special projects on where you want people in for 5 days a week. Under the current legislation, you won't be able to do that. So it's giving flexibility both to employers and employees. It's not saying don't work from home. We're happy with that. But it's just saying give us a break. Give us some flexibility at the same time.
You're listening to Tim Piper from the Australian Industry Group. Tell me if you want something in particular from your new premier, 1300 222 774. And Glenn in Baxter, what are you thinking about this morning?
G'day. Thanks for taking my call. It's not so much business related. I just remember when Jacinta Allen was in power, and I think Lily D'Ambrosio had been the Environment Minister, they pitched to reduce the fisheries inspectors in Victoria, and I believe there's probably only now maybe two, which is not obviously ideal as far as controlling the illegal poaching, which at the time when they were discussing, a lot of experts were saying, well, these poachers are just going to have free rein now because the inspectors won't be able to keep up with everything. So,
right. Do you find comfort in the policies of any of the parties at the moment in that regard?
Well, I haven't actually heard anything from the opposition at all in regards to it all. The impression I get, especially from the opposition, is that they're not very environmentally focused in the first place.
Right.
So I'm just hoping that maybe this new premier might actually look at reversing that decision, or at least addressing it, having a good look at it.
Glenn, I'm sure there'll be many, many things that will be put towards the new premier as he hurtles towards this next election, that balance between consistency and a new face. Tim Piper, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Mary. Thanks for inviting me on.
That's Tim Piper from the Australian Industry Group, and that conversation will obviously keep going as the new premier finds his feet as well. Coming up very soon on the Conversation Hour, we will return to talking to music with Wilbur Wilde, remembering Glenn A. Baker. What are your memories of Glenn A. Baker? I'd love to hear from you. Next, Craig Foster joins you on the civil war breaking out in world soccer so soon after the Men's World Cup.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
Look, it's just a week and a bit, isn't it, after the Men's World Cup, and we have this civil war breaking out in world football. Briefly, if I can sum it up, FIFA, which is already a controversial body in the first place, is proposing a controversial plan to sell off a minority stake of the broadcast rights, the commercial rights to things like the Men's and Women's World Cup and a heap of other tournaments as well, to potentially make money off those tournaments. FIFA says that money will go back towards grassroots development. It's about the democratisation of football. But UEFA, the countries within 55 associations, are threatening to boycott the World Cup and these tournaments as well. The Americas are revolting.
For good measure in all of this, a Trump connection is involved. What should Australia do? Craig Foster is here to tell us the answers as well, former Socceroo and broadcaster and legend. Thank you so much for joining us, Craig. What do you think about this plan? What should people know?
Well, you summed it up very well there. It is a plan that has been rejected roundly by the fans, players around the world, and many federations and confederations, including UEFA, who've now said that they are actually boycotting a coming World Cup. That includes the Women's World Cup next year, of course, which Australia's in. So people just need to understand that the whole process has been absolutely flawed, quite disgraceful, actually. So what's happened is the president of the body, FIFA, that he is bound to act in its interests and the interests of the members, has gone outside, put together a proposal without the knowledge of apparently anyone, either of the 211 federations or the 36-strong council that he sits above or that he's supposed to lead. Mm. He's come back to the game and effectively had FIFA itself, not just him, but FIFA, unbeknownst to everyone else, announced that this is a proposal. He's given the federations like Australia only 53 days to agree to it. He's using the asset of the game against them. He's saying, well, you'll get all of this further dividend, but if you don't agree in 53 days, you'll actually get less. So he's hitting federations against each other. It's unprecedented. And I can't believe that his presidency is going to survive this attempt.
Yeah. And yet we've been there before, Craig Foster. I'd love to hear from people. 1300 222 774. What do you think? Is this sitting well with you? Selling the World Cup commercial rights, is it just part of life? Is this part of how soccer is going to survive across the world? Or what do you think about FIFA? Is it just going to all collapse and implode under the weight of the controversy of FIFA and its controversial president? 1300 222 774 is the number to call. So just to clarify with you, Craig, we are talking about commercial rights versus the sporting regulations, the rules, the tournament formats, the governance. FIFA's promising that's not going to be in private hands. Before we get to Australia's response and how much we should trust FIFA, what do you think about this idea of separating the commercial rights and the minority of them for private investment? Is the criticism that this is the thin end of the wedge?
I think it is. So the danger is we've just seen like hyper-commercialisation of the current World Cup only 2 weeks ago, as you rightly said. And we had, you know, new sponsor breaks. We had the final with, this so-called extravaganza at halftime, which fundamentally changed the nature of the game. And therefore, there's a very strong feeling, I believe it's right, that further external investment brings additional pressure to further commercialise the game. That means the changing of the game's rules, it means the changing of the way it's played even. There's a whole range of pressures which aren't understood, and this is the whole problem. This is not just about whether football should further invest in its crown jewels, in its key assets, or whether further dividends or higher dividends should be distributed around the world. Actually, what it's about is that this has all been done by stealth. It's all been done by the president without the knowledge of the organisation or its members. It's been effectively forced on them with financial coercion. Mm. It's the process which is so egregious, and this is why I say I don't believe that the president is going to survive this, particularly given what the most powerful confederation in the world, in Europe, in UEFA, has done by pulling out of their World Cups.
Mm.
So the matter is not just about finance. It goes to the way that FIFA is actually run and governed, and whether it's able to hold its own president to account.
You're listening to Craig Foster. We're talking about has been described as the civil war in world football. And, of course, within that mix as well, just to mention along the way that, President Donald Trump's son-in-law's brother is involved. So there's also that to be looked at. Craig Foster, Football Australia has said, look, it needs a bit more time to think about this. And it's part of the Asia Conference, as we know, which I think the Asia Conference has said they're against it. Where is Australia sitting in this, and what do you think about its response?
I think it's consistent with the way it's been run over a period of time. You know, Football Australia doesn't like to, if you like, stick its head up too much. In many respects, that's reasonable because it is a reasonably small federation. And so it's come out and said, rightly, look, we didn't know about this, and therefore this is all news to us. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to be speaking, you know, we're going to be reviewing everything and then speaking to the AFC. That's the regional confederation that we sit under, which is Asia. That's consistent with what everyone else has pretty much done around the world. You haven't seen too many federations, that is actual countries, come out. They're all relying on their confederation, right, which is their kind of parent body. So that's why we're talking about UEFA, not Germany, or for example. Some of them have, it's true, but mostly because they're sitting on the board of those organisations. So the representative of England has been, you know, damning in their comments and the like, but that's because they're actually actively involved at governance level of the Confederation UEFA. So I think it's you know, what Football Australia has done is probably appropriate, but I keep saying I can't see a universe in which Football Australia is in any way going to be able to support this.
Yeah.
Because if they do in any way support it, they're fundamentally supporting a complete and utter lack of due diligence, of any governance processes, you know, of a coercive process, which, if followed and allowed to happen, leaves the game extremely vulnerable to, you know, all types of instances of the same manner.
Mm. And just before I let you go, Craig, just how this will impact on what we're looking in the next couple of months. As you say, UEFA is threatening a boycott, and we have the Women's Under 20 World Cup coming up. There's the 2035 Women's World Cup to be talking about as well. What will this do to world football over the next couple of months?
Well, it's certainly pulled it apart, but in the same ways it's brought it together, because UEFA and FIFA have always been at loggerheads, you know, with the two people that are there at the moment. One is Seferin and the other is Infantino. And now you're seeing confederations around the world kind of coalescing together. There is a bigger conversation about a fit-for-purpose governance system of FIFA. And this is going to play into that. That's kind of where my real interest lies. If the fact that this could almost happen, I don't think it's going to happen, but if it could almost happen, then clearly, you know, we need some governance reform at FIFA. We already knew that, but this is the example that shows us that. I think what's probably going to end up happening is that Infantino will be excised out of the organisation. He'll be blamed. But the problem is, of course, a new president will come in, and there's nothing stopping them trying something of this type or similar in under the current governance framework. And that's what really needs to change.
Craig Foster, it's always great to talk with you. Thank you.
Okay. Pleasure.
Craig Foster is, of course, former Socceroo broadcaster and very knowledgeable about all these things. Is this the straw that breaks FIFA and Infantino's back? Janice says Infantino should step down. I agree with Foster that the final was ruined with a long break of entertainment as well. And Football Australia is weak. Tell me what you think about that. Also, I was asking you your memories of Glenn A. Baker. He has passed away. And Colin from Kingsville, you wanted to say something about Glenn A. Baker?
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
You wanted to talk about Raven, the record label he set up. One of the many things
Raven
he did.
Raven Records. I've got many Raven. Every time I go into a second-hand record shop, I look for Raven Records.
What was so special about it, Colin?
Oh, Glenn was great archivist and wrote great record sleeves as well, information about all the bands, released a lot of Australian 60s garage, like Masters Apprentices, Edgy Beats, The Throb, The Missing Links from Melbourne, like a lot of obscure Australian stuff. And taught me a lot about music, and for sure.
Yeah, so much a part of your life, Glenn A. Baker.
Oh, for sure. Very educational and informative bloke, and seemed like a lovely man.
He did indeed. Colin, thank you. Yes, I remember him as a lovely man. I'd never met him, but it was through the screen, parasocial relationship. Yes, there, I think a whole generation had it with him. That's Glenn A. Baker. I'd love to hear your memories of Glenn A. Baker, 1300 222 774, and, of course, how we started the conversation out today. I want to keep hearing about those music videos that have stayed with you.
the favourite ones. Do you still look at music videos like me? 45 years on, can you believe, from the establishment of MTV. 1300 222 774 on the Conversation Hour. But next, Wilbur Wilde remembers his good mate, Glenn A. Baker.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is the Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin. Oh, baby, you got me in the shade.
You can hear the sax work of Wilbur Wilde, of course. He became a big star as a saxophonist and then a TV personality and a radio presenter as well. And he got his start because he was brought in under Glenn A. Baker's management of Ole 55 way back in the late 1970s. So joining us to pay tribute to Glenn A. Baker is Wilbur Wilde. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Mary Guerin.
Tell me, I believe that Glenn A. Baker actually got you into Ole 55. Do you remember the first time you met him? Tell me.
Oh, yeah. Now, look, why I say it's my pleasure to be talking with you, it's my pleasure to be paying homage to one of the bright guys, one of the enthusiastic, knowledgeable people in the rock and roll scene. He eventually became the rock brain of the universe. His commitment and his enthusiasm and his ability to pester Michael Gudinski, the then head of Mushroom Records, was instrumental in Ole 55's success.
and great to have as a manager.
Look, well, okay, in that respect, yes, but I can do a tight 10 on why it wasn't. But now, look, we were all discovering how it worked, as was he. He came out of the public service, knew the drummer, Jeff Plummer, from Ole 55, and they were sort of associated with Jim Manzi, who was the bass player, and the guitar players, they sort of came along. But, of course, I heard an ad on 2 Double J, as it was in those days, in 1975, and it just, you know, it was like Holger Brockman or Chris Winter saying, Ole 55 requires saxophone player, 50s revival band. And I rocked up at a gig, and there they were. And the profound seminal moment for me was when I saw Frankie J. Holden. And of course, to have a manager to marshal or wrangle that group of guys, I suppose I made. You must pay credit that we lasted, Frank and I lasted about a little bit less than 2 years. In that time, though, we had some great success, meteoric ascent to stardom.
Absolutely. And then, you know, obviously leading to both of your stellar careers from there. Glenn A. Baker had this encyclopedic knowledge and so forth, and you say, was just learning to become a manager at that time. So what was he like to deal with at that point?
Baker was, he was like a normal guy, right? Mm. He was a normal guy except for this complete obsession with rock and roll and, well, all things rock and roll music. And for him to suggest, like, the template, if you will, of a 50s revival, kind of like Happy Days, Sha-na-na, Danny and the Juniors vibe, and then, you know, they were the parameters within which we all played a role. You know, and of course, Frankie J. Holden was the most marvelous mimic. And, you know, Baker's great triumph was actually convincing Frank. I think Glenn A. Baker and Jimmy Manzi convinced Frank, who they spotted at a university tryout night in some pub near Sydney Uni, that their great triumph was to actually convince Frank to do this, because at the time, Frankie J. Holden was a chartered accountant with Price Waterhouse. Right. He was a golden boy. I kid you, right. So one of the few few months after we've been touring and getting, you know, on Countdown and stuff like that, one of the clients saw Frank, you know, in his gold lame suit and half a tub of brew cream in his hair on Countdown and started raised his hackles. And, of course, Frank actually got he got the sack from Price Waterhouse. So Baker had a lot of explaining to do, and thank heavens it was successful.
Exactly. You're with Wilbur Wild. That's who you're listening to. We're talking about the old times. We're paying tribute to Glenn A. Baker.
Certainly are. A lot of tribute to be paid, by the way. If it means anything to anybody listening, Glenn was married to Laurel for many years. They had separated, but their children, Rudy, Orson, Riley, Tristan, and Cairo. And I did that off the top of my head.
That's
by the
well
way.
Done.
If it's any tribute to Glenn, I remember the names of all of his children, and they're all doing well. I'm sure Laurel is very sad about this. So I contacted her only a couple of months ago. She sort of just, came, and we were talking about this, and I knew of his ill health. It's no surprise to me today that, well, you know, it's sad and everything. But he spoke at Rene Gay's funeral at the memorial, a couple of years ago, and did a great job there because, look, he knew all of those people. And as I said, he was a good mate of Michael Gudinski's and played a part in, he was part of the whole thing. So, Vale, the rock brain of the universe.
Vale, indeed. Wilbur Wild, thank you so much for joining us and adding to the tributes for Glenn A. Baker. Really appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Once again, Mary Gear and cheers.
Thank you. That's Wilbur Wild joining us and joining in all the tributes that everyone's having today. Raph Epstein actually spoke with Glenn A. Baker's son, Orson Baker. And let's have a little listen again. He's talking about a jealousy of his dad.
I can't help but sit here sometimes and think of almost a jealousy because Glenn decided not to have a career where he worked for the man. He found a passion from, when he was probably 7 years old, and that was picking up a record and playing it, and just he was mesmerized, and that became what he dedicated his life to. So whilst most of us were, putting on a suit and going to the office, he was forming bands. He formed Old 55 in the mid-70s, right about the time I was being born.
Old 55, and we heard from Wilbur Wild before. It was such a lovely interview with Orson Baker and really reflecting on not just the legacy that he left to music, but also just what drove him. Let's have a little listen to that.
They were collected through blood, sweat and tears, right? And this is what he lived for, to go out and grow them. So he actually had frequently private access to record fairs. He would turn up an hour before the record fair opened and get free rein. So just to ensure that he got every copy of whatever, the artist was that he was trying to go after at that particular time, he would get it. My young years were formed around the record collection. I grew up with it in our house.
Of course, that's Orson Baker talking about the incredible record collection of Glenn A. Baker as well. This on text, what an absolute music guru Glenn A. Baker was. I've a mental picture of him in my head. He never seemed to change much, kind of like Brian Cadd in a cool Hawaii shirt. Definitely a feature of my childhood, as were music videos. You've got a few minutes yet if you want to call in 1300 222 774. Tell us the music video I should be watching this afternoon as I do indulge. Thank you for joining me on the Conversation Hour today. Been absolutely delightful to be here all week. Join me again next week. I think I should give the final word on music videos to these guys, Dire Straits.
For nothing, get your chicks for free.